Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up on today's program, we've got stories from Community Voices producers Renee Wild, Jason Reynolds, and Jim Kale. We've got movie tax credits on the plate. Up first, this week, a number of organizations hosted events to spotlight Ohio in Demand Jobs Week. Officials called it a statewide celebration of jobs, industries, and skills on demand. With that in mind, state and local public health advocates gathered Wednesday at the Daybreak Shelter for Runaway and Homeless Youth in Dayton. The event was centered around the importance of steady employment in helping young people get back on their feet after drug addiction. At the event, a number of speakers addressed the crowd. You can hear their words on our website. But the last to speak was 24-year-old Jay Paxson. He spoke about the Daybreak program and what it's done for him as he closes in on a year in recovery from homelessness and heroin addiction.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's crazy to hear all this talked about, and in my head I'm thinking, man, I've lived this. This is me. And so like a year and a half ago, I was not in a place where I am now. I was homeless, I was living in abandoned houses, and I was a full-blown heroin addict. And life was not easy. I was undiagnosed depression, undiagnosed anxiety, and living at halfway Gateway Shelter and half just in abandoned houses. And one day, this wonderful lady named Miss Jill, she came to the shelter, and she kind of plucked me out and told me that there was other options. And that was key. She gave me her card. Said, if you ever need anything, you call me. So I had that card in my wallet for a while. And then one day, I managed to get a hold of a local rehab, and they told me that they had a bed available. So I called Miss Jill, and she came and picked me up from where I was at, and she took me there. She walked me inside, she signed me up, she made sure I was safe. 40 days later, I'm in sober living, she comes to visit me and tells me about this day training program at Lindy's. And I say, that sounds awesome. I am ready to get back into the working world. I wanna have purpose, I wanna be useful. So I go and I day train a couple times and I'm like, yeah, you know, I like this. And I get signed up and I get employment there. Fast forward a little bit, now I'm a lead over at the bakery, all because of Daybreak. Daybreak's an amazing program when you really need to get your life together and you want to get your life together. That's what the key was for me, is I had enough of being who I was, and I knew I was better. See, I wasn't Jay anymore, I was heroin. There's no person left when you're in addiction like that. It's, the only thing that matters is getting well. It doesn't matter who you screw over, it doesn't matter who you rob, what you have to do. Where you live, where you sleep, all that matters is getting well. And I was becoming myself again. I was becoming Jay again. I was starting to laugh again. I was starting to find joy in things that I hadn't found joy in a very long time. And from working at Lindy's, I eventually progressed from just being a regular employee to being a lead. And that was amazing to me because I was like, I've never been a lead anywhere in my life. Even before I had a drug problem, I had a problem keeping jobs. I was one of those guys that's, man, I'm 4 minutes late, I might as well just not go. So I wake up in the morning now and I'm excited to get to work. I am excited for the possibilities. I don't know what's going to happen each day, and I am filled with joy. And I come here and I love the people I work with, and I love being a little bit in charge a little bit. People have to listen to me sometimes. That's pretty nice. And they've facilitated in every way what I want to do. And I realized through after rehab and everything that I would like to become a drug and alcohol counselor, because I feel like just I could give back, you know. I've really got this sobriety thing down. I'll be a year sober May 29th. And I gotta say, a lot of it was way easier just being here, having purpose, waking up, coming in, and doing my job, and doing it well, and being praised, and it's been amazing. I just got my email, I'm signed up for peer support classes, so I get to be, I'll be Jason Paxson, peer support specialist. I've never had a title before, so that's really awesome. And yeah, I'm excited to go to school and get this done and get my CDCA. And all of this is thanks to Daybreak. They've facilitated my growth in every possible way. I've grown as a person. I have motivation. I have drive. I want to better myself. I set goals and I accomplish goals. I take steps, real visible steps, where I'm like, wow, I'm really doing what I want to do. I'm really going forth and taking hold and grabbing that brass ring and saying, this is my life, and I'm the master of my own universe. And the support staff here, everybody here is just so supportive, and it's amazing. And I can talk to any one of these people like they are my family, and I love them all a great amount. And they're in my corner, and they're always cheering for me, and I just could not be more thankful. So I think that's about all I have to say.
24-year-old Jay Paxson speaking on Wednesday at the Daybreak Shelter for Runaway and Homeless Youth. You can find all the speakers on our website at wyso.org. Downtown Dayton is full of landmarks. The Levitt Pavilion, the Schuster Center, the Wright Brothers flyover sculpture on Jefferson Street. Today, Community Voices producer Jim Kale answers one of your Why So Curious questions about a downtown icon with a buffalo's tail.
This is Jim Kale for Why So Curious with Gwen Owen.
I have been curious about the big buffalo statue that stands outside K-12 Gallery in downtown Dayton. So I looked at it again just this morning on my way in. I thought, what is your deal? See this big, serious, heavy-looking buffalo statue. And I feel like it must have a story. Where did that thing come from?
For that answer, I went to the K-12 TS Gallery at the corner of South Jefferson Street and South Patterson Boulevard and asked longtime art supporter and fearless leader of the K-12, Jerry Standard, just how the buffalo came to be there.
So that happened in 2015. Mark Parker, he drove up in the lot with a large buffalo bison on his truck. And he said, hey, what do you think about putting this out front to see if you can sell it? I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. That would be a lot of fun.
So there was no preamble, there was no meeting?
No.
Where the board of directors got together and said, we need a buffalo?
No.
No? Somebody drove up unknown to you and asked you if you wanted a buffalo.
Yeah.
Does he have a name?
No.
He's been here for 4 years and he doesn't have a name?
Well, he's still for sale.
Next, I tracked down the owner of the Nameless Buffalo, Mark Parker, proprietor of Westside Auto Salvage, and asked him how he came to own a 16-foot long, 9-foot tall, 5-foot wide fiberglass buffalo.
Buffalo originated from the Green. They had them in different places there. Then after the holidays, they put them in storage. Then what I was told was somebody else bought the Green, and they didn't want to put them up. So actually, they was in the parking garage of the Green. One day, I'm looking on Craigslist, and I called the guy, and I went up there, and I ended up cutting a deal, and I bought all 10 animals. We didn't think about coming out of the parking garage, but when we got to the end, it was so low, we couldn't get it out. So we had to unload it again. It took 10 of us to unload it and put it on these wheels and then roll it out of the garage and then put it back on his flatbed tow truck and bring it to where it is.
The buffalo has obviously become an icon and has found at least a temporary home at K-12. I asked Jerry about the buffalo's future.
So there's no clear path for what's going to happen to the buffalo.
No.
So if you were able to come up with the money to purchase him or somebody decided to donate him or something like that, would he get a name?
He would definitely get a name.
Ohio was once the home of countless wild buffalo roaming the Great Plains. The huge herds are long gone, but downtown Dayton, Ohio is at least a temporary home to one nameless fiberglass buffalo. For Why So Curious, this is Community Voices producer Jim Kale.
Why So Curious is our series where you ask the questions and Why So producers answer them on the air. Tell us what you're curious about by visiting our website, wyso.org.
We reach for mystic chords of memory about music, first with Lubbock to Austin, Texas man of songs Joe Ely, and then 90-year-old Southern gospel and soul singer Roscoe Robinson. Also music for reflections on life in these United States from Johnny Cash and Cab Moe. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Saturday night at 10 and Sunday evening at 6, right here on 91.3 WYSO.
Are you a young WYSO listener who wants to get more involved? WYSO wants to hear your ideas and give you a voice. Our Next Up program allows young professionals to get together and talk about their favorite radio shows. Listening parties, station events, and volunteer work are available for members. Whether it's at the local brewery or in our station, Next Up provides opportunities for new listeners to come together. Head over to the WYSO Next Up Facebook page to learn more. Thank you.
I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WYSO Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us this Sunday morning. There's a blockbuster battle brewing over a small tax credit that was cut in the House version of the budget. On Friday, State House correspondent Karen Kassler filed this report.
Speaker Larry Householder led the charge to cut the $40 million film tax credit, saying that money would be better spent on reducing income taxes across the board, including eliminating them for people making under $22,000 a year. And Householder said after the House budget passed overwhelmingly that he was determined to cut what he called special deals for certain people.
And we said, you know, it's special enough to be a citizen in the state of Ohio. It's like that movie credit, you know. I care more about Bob Buckeye in Beverly, Ohio, than I do about Bobby De Niro in Beverly Hills. And so we want to make our investment in Ohioans.
With all respect to the speaker, that's silly and short-sighted.
Householder's Republican State House colleague Matt Dolan of Chagrin Falls, east of Cleveland, chairs the Senate Finance Committee, where the House budget is now headed. Dolan says he's extremely disappointed that the tax credit was cut, and he's frustrated there wasn't more outcry over it. He says it sends a bad message.
Even when we get it back, and notice I said when, because it's imperative we get it back, we now have to reassure investors, reassure that someone who wants to come out of the film school, that Ohio is still going to be a great place to work.
Criticism about the film tax credit goes back years. In 2012, conservative Republican Representative Lynn Wachman said the bottom line for him was that Ohio money was leaving to support an industry in another state.
God bless the Hollywood folks, but I don't believe that the taxpayers of Ohio should be subsidizing Hollywood with this tax credit.
And in 2016, and way on the other side of political perspective, Wendy Patton with the progressive-leaning research group Policy Matters Ohio called the film tax credit a bad deal for the state.
The leakiness of this financial mechanism is unparalleled and a waste of taxpayer money.
Patton has cited a study showing the credit encourages mostly temporary jobs, and she says it would have to be dramatically increased to be more effective. That's okay by Dolan, who says those who cut the credit didn't add up the income and sales tax that Ohio would lose if it's permanently erased.
I think once we got the mechanics and the improvements in place, then I think we should be looking to increase the investment, all within the context of a budget, because there's lots of really good things that the governor's trying to do. But I think we need to have a discussion in the Senate about whether we should increase it.
And it appears the Senate may agree. The day that the House committee unanimously passed the budget cutting the credit, the Senate unanimously passed a bill making some changes to the credit and expanding it to theatrical productions, some of which can stay in residence in communities for months to retool and finalize their shows before they go to Broadway. Republican Senator Kirk Schuring says the bill would also score applications based on economic development and not just award the tax credit first come, first served, as the process is now.
It clarifies that the economic impact is defined by the total expenditures made in Ohio and also puts an emphasis on the jobs that are hired because of these projects.
After that unanimous vote, Senate President Larry Obhoff said he's confident the movie tax credit has spurred economic development.
I believe that it has, and I think the legislature has consistently believed that it has.
Dolan can't say where the money would come from to restore the movie tax credit, but he says his preliminary view is that he has concerns about some of the changes the House made in the budget and whether they will be a priority in the Senate. Karen Kessler, The Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
With the political battles for the White House and Congress already heating up months ahead of 2020, so is the partisan bickering. A new training program in Dayton aims to help everyday people avoid such disagreements in their own lives. The trainings are inspired by a documentary film called American Creed. It features people from the left and the right sitting down together to discuss what it means to be American today. For WISO News, Community Voices producer Jason Reynolds reports organizers hope to spark the same sort of conversations around the Miami Valley this election season.
The American Creed conversation is a great one to start with, especially if you
have... In a conference room in the back of Wright Memorial Library, reference librarian Elizabeth Schmidt is teaching a handful of people how to host conversations that can sometimes get a little sticky. The library has held a lot of community conversations. They've covered voting, technology, racism, and Islamophobia. Now, Wright Memorial is one of 50 libraries across the country teaching community members how to moderate those kind of talks in their own homes. Schmidt says that's why they're called living room conversations.
Getting together with another person who perhaps is across the aisle from you, thinks differently, you each invite two friends to come and have a conversation. The goal of the conversation is to connect with other people who think differently than you.
Living room conversations are also featured in the documentary American Creed. At one point in the movie, Mark Meckler, who founded the Tea Party, and Joan Blades, who founded MoveOn.org, talk about how they learned to talk to each other and became friends.
There's some things that we are just so far apart on that there's some discomfort there. But I recognize him as a friend.
You could say Joan Blades, the founder of MoveOn.org, an organization that I don't really like, politically speaking, but when you put the human to the organization, it changes everything.
But Blades and Meckler may be the exception that proves the rule. The people at the Wright Library training say they don't see a lot of Americans with opposing political opinions talking about issues they might disagree on, at least not nicely. Participant Laurel Kerr says she'd like to see more civil discourse.
Many people have stopped feeling like they can talk to people in their own family, their friends, their neighbors, and that's isolating.
Kerr says she's hoping to learn how to navigate political conversations in her own life, and that focusing on the core values many Americans do share can connect us beyond the red-blue divide.
I do believe we need to stand up for what we believe, but I don't need to insist that everybody else believe it with me. And even though we have different political beliefs or opinions, we can still care about each other.
Kerr's sense of urgency and empathy is echoed by others at the training, but the folks here are self-selecting. They chose to participate. What happens when they try these new skills out? Can these living room conversations work in the real and really divided world?
Absolutely.
That's Joe Valenzano from the University of Dayton. He designed a communications class that features conversations very similar to living room conversations, and he wrote the textbook for it. It's a class every UD student has to take. Valenzano says it teaches them how to disagree without being disagreeable and how to better define dialogue.
Dialogue is speaking in a way that invites other people to listen and listening in a way that invites other people to speak.
He thinks small group discussions like the ones being taught at Wright Library are vital to our democracy.
If you can get six or seven people in a room to learn how to do this, and then they go and they each one of them gets six or seven to do this, in a couple of years, you really have built a foundation in a community that's open, that's democratic, that isn't afraid to engage different ideas, and can do so without making people feel unwelcome.
So I just want to talk about, you know, bringing together people who might disagree, because that can be kind of scary.
Back at Wright Memorial Library, David Chisar says he wants to be one of those six or seven people who get another six or seven people to start talking.
I would like to host one of these, maybe for some of the parents in my neighborhood or along the street, and kind of learn more about each other and still feel free to have differing opinions, because I really think everybody's kind of a resource for each other, that, you know, when you lose a differing opinion or even you close your ears to even hearing it, you've kind of lost something yourself.
That's exactly the kind of thing librarian Elizabeth Schmidt was hoping to hear. And she says she hopes more Daytonians will try these sort of talks in the lead up to the 2020 elections.
People can make this happen, you know, on their block or in their neighborhood.
With politicians and pundits already arguing and attacking each other in advance of 2020, there may be no better time for the people to put some polite back in politics. For WYSO News, I'm Community Voices producer Jason Reynolds.
and an initiative underway in Yellow Springs to help out individuals and families struggling to pay their bills called the Utility Roundup is underway. And WISO's Juliet Fromholt spoke to the program coordinator on Wednesday night's Kaleidoscope. Check it out.
I'm Juliet Fromholt, and we're going to tell you about something really awesome happening in Yellow Springs. I am joined by a person who has been helping out on the show. You've heard her influence behind the scenes, though this is going to be her first time joining us on this side of the mic. I want to welcome my colleague in Kaleidoscope and the Utility Roundup coordinator here in Yellow Springs, Connor Jamison. Connor, welcome.
Hi, Juliet. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So in addition to, you know, being an all-around awesome person, helping out on this show, being an amazing Antioch student, you are the Utility Roundup coordinator here in Yellow Springs. Tell us what that program is.
Yeah. So the Utility Roundup program was established in January of this year. It's a community-wide initiative asking Yellow Springs community members to round up to the nearest dollar on their utility bills. And so rounding up, giving change towards change, as we say, raises money to financially support those who are in danger of having their utilities disconnected.
So it's an easy way for community to come together in support of members in need who need a little help from time to time.
Exactly. Our families and friends in Yellow Springs.
Fantastic. And this has been an effort that sort of started within the village and is rippling outward into the neighborhoods. And now some other community-minded folks are getting involved. Yellow Springs Brewery is going to be hosting an event next week. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's been really wonderful collaborating with the Yellow Springs Brewery. Everyone over there is awesome and very accommodating and very supportive of our cause. So on May 16th from 7 to 9, the Yellow Springs Brewery will be hosting their Thirsty Thursday, which is a fundraiser in which they give their proceeds to a nonprofit organization. And so May 16th, we're going to be there with the Utility Roundup program. And I will be there. So proceeds from beer, wine, and cider will go to support the program.
Fantastic. So yeah. An easy way to step up and help the community. Come have a beer with your neighbors. Enjoy kind of the fruits of our community and know that your night out is doing some good.
Exactly. Come have a beer with your friends, play Big Uno, get some food from the food truck. This really is a community-wide event and a community-wide initiative. We're really working to raise awareness of this program so people can support one another in the Yellow Springs community. And I will be there, so come and meet me and ask me questions about the Utility Roundup program.
Fantastic. And moving forward from the event next Thursday, I know that you all have some other activities planned. How can folks get involved in kind of the continuing activity of getting the word out? In addition to checking that box on their utility bill to round up, how else can people get involved moving forward into the summer?
Yes, please check the box on your utility bill. It's at the bottom of your utility bill if you are interested in rounding up. And we do have some further events happening. We're in the process of organizing a canvassing event. And so keep your emails updated and follow the Village Facebook. We'll have announcements when the canvass comes closer. We are going to be looking for volunteers going door to door. So think about that if you are thinking of ways in which you can give back and do some community service.
Fantastic. Well, we will look forward to that. And we'll put a link up to the Village's Facebook page on our Facebook page, facebook.com/kaleidoscoperadio, as well as all of the details about next Thursday night's event. It's May 16th at Yellow Springs Brewery. It's part of their Thirsty Thursdays program, which gives proceeds back to the local community. You can go have your beverage of choice, and those proceeds will be benefiting the Yellow Springs Utility Roundup. Connor, thank you so much much for being here. This is an awesome program. Thank you for your work on it. And we're excited to hear more about how this develops.
Yeah, Juliet, thank you so much. I love Kaleidoscope. I love being here with you every Wednesday. So it's a pleasure to actually be talking to you on air.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All the details at facebook.com/kaleidoscoperadio. Right now, Cat Power.
For more Kaleidoscope interviews and music, check out our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WYSO Weekend. It's been a very wet spring here in Southwest Ohio. April showers dropped above average rainfall amounts. Drive along county roads in the region and you can see a lot of muddy fields and standing water. And so we wanted to know, if you're a farmer, are you worried about too much rain? Today on County Lines, producer Renee Wild talks with one farmer named Jim Spar on his farm near Jamestown to find out.
Here in western Greene County, the birds are singing, the chickens are clucking, and in the distance, another storm is moving in. In this part of Ohio, there has been above average rainfall for the past 6 months.
We had a tough time last fall, and a lot of farmers did, getting the crops harvested. It was late. We didn't get finished up actually till early January, which was probably the latest I've ever run, I suppose. And that's carried over clear into spring. It's wet. It's been staying wet. We had kind of a tough winter the whole way through, so we didn't make a lot of progress on things.
Inside Spar's barn, $70,000 worth of corn and soybean seeds are stacked in bags on a flatbed wagon waiting to be planted. But Jim isn't really worried that they aren't in the ground yet.
But this could change very quickly. I've seen it happen that it could look like we're kind of desperate and it may take off and be dry from here on and be perfect. We may be done planting by the 20th of May or something. Because most of the farmers can get a lot done real quick when it becomes time to do it. Because you got to have it so you can get a lot done when the weather permits. We're always struggling with the weather.
So for farmers, it's just another Ohio spring with its unpredictable weather.
We're kind of used to this. I've done this quite a bit, and I probably shouldn't tell how many years I've farmed. I'll give my age away. But I've been doing this since I was a child. So.
Spar will be planting 800 acres of crops this year, a little less than what he's done in the past.
We can plant corn clear up till end of June and have corn and soybeans clear to the 1st of July, but you'll have more if you get them planted early.
The later you plant, the later the harvest.
You'll have better crops if you get them planted early. There's a lot of good things to plant early. The crops will yield better. They'll be drier in the fall to help your harvest in the fall. And you'll spend less money trying to dry corn if you get it planted halfway early.
Many farmers are using these rainy days to sell their harvest from last year.
So we're moving some grain on a regular basis, although prices aren't very good. That's been another issue. So ever since fall, it hasn't improved much at all, it seems like. It just, the market is kind of dead in the water.
For now, farmers are taking advantage of these rainy days to get equipment ready, so that when the sun finally comes out, they're ready to go.
Yeah, this is business as usual. It really is. Every year is a little unique, and we have plenty of wet years and lots of difficult weather, wet falls, and other times it's perfect. You just never know. It's just the way it is. If you're going to farm, you better be used to it, I guess.
For County Lines, I'm Renee Wild, Jamestown, Ohio.
County Lines is produced with a grant from Ohio Humanities. And that's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up on WYSO Now, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.